Support for this program is brought to you by the Minnesota Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund. Hello and good evening. Welcome to CultureQ, Radio K's arts and cultural program that has for over 5 years been dedicated to providing you with enthralling stories about the many wonders of the Twin Cities that you won't hear anywhere else. I'm your host, Matthew Curtis, and before saying hello to new years and new beginnings, we must say goodbye to an old friend of ours. This semester we are carrying on without two people that have made CultureQ the show it is today, Markita Fornoff and former host Mitch Skinner. This week we are taking a trip back through the last 4 years of the program to observe one of the most revered producers that has ever walked through the corridors of Radio K. His writing enticing, his speech exciting, and his storytelling encapsulating. He has worked as my grumpy guardian, assisting me with every step of every story I've ever made, and I owe him a lot. This evening we are paying tribute to, of course, Mitch Skinner, by revisiting some of his best stories to give him the send-off that only 4 years on the force earns you. This is the Mitch Skinner Retrospective on Radio K's CultureQ.
So you ready to get started?
Thanks for joining. It's okay. People, stay frosty now. Remember how we did this in rehearsal? Places now. Here we go.
I'm on top of the world, about to shake what my mama gave me.
All right, before we get started, here we're going to play a few words from Parker Lemke, fellow producer, and he has a few words to say about the man of the half hour.
When talking about Mitz, the first thing that comes to mind is his friendly demeanor and personality. That's the first thing that's noticeable about him. When I started out as a volunteer reporter, he always created a supportive atmosphere that made me want to stick around, work on stories, and come to meetings even when I was completely swamped with schoolwork. He always seemed to be shouldering the most work of us all, putting the show together behind the scenes on a very tight schedule, because I at least always got my stuff in at the last minute. And yet he always came through making sure to put the show together and making sure it aired every week. And yet he was also the kind of boss who would play Super Metroid on the Super Nintendo before a meeting, just a fun guy to be around. Most importantly, he always seemed to have fun doing what he was doing. His enthusiasm is really noticeable in his stories. He was the perfect Mr. Simmons for our Hey Arnold Thanksgiving radio play. He had the right kind of perky, enthusiastic voice for the role.
Our first story of the program truly encapsulates Mitch's interests and hobbies. He is an avid gamer at heart, and this 5-minute piece of his paints the portrait of tabletop games such as Dungeons and Dragons in the age of ever-growing fascination with technology and electronics.
Imagine this. It's a Friday night, and it's raining. You're a 20-something socialite, so you have a few friends over. The party is a success. Everyone is laughing and having a good time when suddenly power goes out. Your party must now decide what to do. Since you're the host, you pass your turn. A friend suggests everyone plays Dungeons and Dragons.
Anyone want to play Dungeons and Dragons for the next quadrillion years?
You're not so sure. You try to roll a saving throw, but it fails. You have to play. You and everyone else make characters, your avatar, into this brave new world. You set off on your journey, meeting new people, fighting monsters, and before long, having a lot of fun. The game wasn't as nerdy as you thought.
When we first started, everyone was a little leery of Dungeons and Dragons because they kind of immediately thought, well, isn't that just for, like, uber nerds, you know? Like, we actually play with our wives, like, the group of people that I play with. They were just kind of like, I don't know if we really want to do this.
That's local singer-songwriter Jeremy Mezersmith. After some initial apprehension, his group decided to give D&D a try, and they ended up enjoying it.
Dungeons and Dragons feels a little bit like, you know, some kind of, like, shared human past, or, you know, we'd all seen Lord of the Rings, obviously, so easier to imagine a world like that. So I think that's why we settled on Dungeons & Dragons.
He now acts as Dungeon Master in a weekly game of D&D with friends.
I am the Game Master. You are my pawns. I created the world you see before you. I control your fate.
Mezzer Smith describes Dungeons & Dragons as a creative exercise for him as a musician.
You invent scenarios, just like you would, you know, when you're writing a song. You invent characters, also just like you would in a song. You invent plots, which, well, you also end up doing that in songs, too.
And even if the game is nerdy, it's okay, because nerdy seems to be the new cool. At least if Fox TV promos and their odd portmanteaus are to be believed.
I think so. I think it's kind of like, you know, it's like geek hipsters. If you play D&D and it's like, oh, you know, that's retro and old school and you did it first and whatever. So I don't know. I think I play it because it's really fun. It's fun to make up stories.
And the retro aspect of the game isn't necessarily suffering in the internet age. Brennan Taylor, the president of Galileo Games, a maker of role-playing games, explained that the internet gives indie games greater exposure.
It was a lot more difficult to get games published back in the 90s and earlier because of a couple of factors. One is the, you know, the general distribution possibilities that the internet presents, and the other is print-on-demand technology that came out in the early 2000s, which reduced the cost of publishing short runs of books a lot.
And while massively multiplayer online role-playing games like World of Warcraft may be huge sellers, they haven't killed pen and paper games. This may be because of the differences of the RPG types. As Taylor explained, online games can offer the same creative freedom as traditional RPGs.
There's a lot more negotiating that goes on. There's a lot more input that each individual player has into the way that the story's going to go. You get a lot more things that seem like really surprising or unexpected events coming up because of people's actions that you may not have been able to predict.
Jeremy Messersmith knows all about crazy plot twists. He explained that his party plays seasonally and the plot is episodic, like a TV series. He includes soap opera-like twists into the episodes.
Yeah, let's just say that somebody just found their long-lost son and they're about to kill each other. That's where we left off last week.
And I think computer games are starting to get there. I mean, they're trying for that sort of thing. That's one of the strengths that a lot of people talked about with Mass Effect. But, you know, obviously there's only so many variables that a programmer can plan for.
Brennan Taylor says he believes computer games will try to integrate more of the tabletop experience in the future to create a greater communal experience.
The more that computer games can simulate the tabletop experience, I think the more people will be picking those up who are traditional role players. I mean, the other thing about tabletop is, you know, it's a social activity. So part of it is sitting down with your friends. And that's something that I don't think is going to stop happening. People like to do that.
I still crave, you know, going over to my friend's house and, you know, drinking beer and eating snacks with them.
And while these games offer great entertainment, their value doesn't end there. Messersmith has a few words for those who think games are a waste of time.
Well, okay, I'm just thinking of my own parents who I think look down on me for playing video games for, you know, obscene amounts of time. But I think games are like an important part of human culture, and I think they teach us a lot and give us a chance to role play, see things from other people's perspectives.
It should also be said that Dungeons & Dragons isn't the end-all for RPGs. There's a whole world of whole worlds to explore if you're willing to play the role.
If I had a slightly better life.
With Culture Cube, I'm Mitch Skinner.
During his time at Culture Q, Mitch Skinner wasn't afraid to hit on sensitive and controversial topics. And this story conveys how Mitch is able to treat a delicate subject with a careful and critical eye. Here he is exploring Islamophobia within the US.
The phrase, never forget, is often used in association with September 11, 2001. However, what is not forgotten but is often overlooked is the impact the attack had on Muslims and the Islamic communities of the United States. Often the religion is blamed for the attacks. In 2010, on the 9th anniversary of 9/11, President Obama had this to say.
Not a religion that attacked us that September day. It was Al-Qaeda, a sorry band of men which perverts religion.
Shah Khan, the elected president of the Islamic Center of Minnesota, had similar sentiments.
People have this fear, and they have been fed wrong concepts about Islam. The phobia itself is not about the religion itself. It's about the acts of people who associate themselves towards this religion.
Khan believes the media has a part in perpetuating this negative association.
Every time, you know, you turn on the television, you hear about something bad happening somewhere in the world. It automatically, without any second thought, without giving any second thought, people assume that it's supposed to be someone from Islam or someone from the Muslim culture. Like, for example, which really shocked everybody or myself too, that shooting which happened in Norway. Even before the findings came out, everybody assumed that it was a Muslim, but it turned out to be a white Christian.
Despite the misconceptions of the religion, Khan points out that since 9/11, the country's interest and knowledge of Islam and the Middle East has increased exponentially.
Before 9/11, we didn't know anything about much about Islam. We didn't know much about Iraq, Iran, Afghanistan. We didn't even know where these countries existed on the map in geography.
I personally believe that U.S. Americans are unable to do so because some people out there in our nation don't have maps, and I believe that our education, like such as in South Africa and the Iraq, everywhere like such as...
According to its president, Abdul Nasir, educating the public and other students is part of the goal of the Ahmadiyya Muslim Student Association at the University of Minnesota.
It's specifically to reject the notion that Islam is a violent religion. We want to show that Islam is about peace and it's about tolerance. You know, while some group of people who claim to be Muslims, you know, inflicted the 9/11 attacks, we are representing the true Islam, which is about saving lives rather than taking lives.
In keeping with this message, AMSA is taking part in the upcoming Muslims for Life event for commemoration of the 10th anniversary of 9/11.
The goal of the campaign is to raise 10,000 blood bags, which will save about 30,000 lives.
However, as Nasir explained to me, not everyone is always appreciative of these peace efforts.
One thing I remember is once I remember I was wearing a Muslim prayer cap and I was driving, and I've had people come by my car and show their middle fingers.
What about here at the University of Minnesota? How is the tolerance level here?
I think Minnesota in general is pretty tolerant, and University of Minnesota and Minneapolis in general, I think it's a diverse city, so I haven't felt much of any issue.
Of course, as former National Public Radio personality Juan Williams can tell you, tolerance can change when it comes to airport security.
I gotta tell you, if I see people who are in Muslim garb, and I think, you know, they're identifying themselves first and foremost as Muslims, I get worried, I get nervous.
However, Shah Khan noted to me that fear is not a characteristic distinguished from Muslims.
I love my life too. It is very, very scary, like, you know, when you're flying, when you are in the plane, that if I happen to see any kind of act which scares any other human being, it scares me too. I have a family, I have my life, and I have a job, so who doesn't want to live a happy life?
So maybe it's possible that despite the attacks of a small group of people in 2001, that Muslims are like the rest of us. While some may be capable of hatred and committing atrocious acts, many others feel emotions, including compassion and fear, and in fact, are human after all. With Culture Q, I'm Mitch Skinner.
Production director for Radio K, Zoe Peterson, stopped by to say a few kind words about former host Mitch Skinner to wish him a farewell after his years of service.
I will never understand how Mitch has the capacity to be simultaneously the sassiest person I know and such an excellent journalist. While sometimes a little gruff, Mitch is super funny, crazy smart, and generally a great guy. Whether it's Culture Q, the Top 77 Countdown, or just hanging around the DJ booth, Mitch is always the best host. I'm sad to see him go. It's our party, we can do what we want. It's our party, we can say what we want. It's our party, we can love what we want. We can kiss who we want, we can screw what we want. It's our party, we can do what we want. It's our party, we can say what we want.
Alright, this one I couldn't not put in. In 2013, Miley Cyrus reigned our social networks, television's music players, our conversations, and Mitch Skinner took it upon himself to investigate. My favorite story of his, first broadcast in October last year.
Stop for a second, please, Miley. Please, I beg you, just stop.
Diane with Jay Wadna tells me Miley Cyrus is ruining her business. That business is the Twerk Shop, located in Melbourne, Australia. Attendance is a little down since Miley got on stage. To add insult to injury, apparently Miley didn't even properly twerk it.
A YouTube video on my way to work, like at a stop sign, and I had, like, I watched it and I thought I wasn't paying enough attention. So then I like pulled over and watched it again because I was so confused. So I'm like, she's not twerking.
The motion was all wrong. Miley Cyrus was grinding. Twerking requires more of a fine jiggle. Here's how it's done. First, you need to bend your knees. Then you lift your arms and stretch your back.
You get that arch in your back when you stretch it out, and then you would need to lift the top part of your bum. You want to lift that into your back, and it's always on an up motion. So you go lift it up into your back and then drop it center. You don't want to go forward because then it looks like you're thrusting.
And I certainly don't want to look like I'm thrusting. I don't even want to look like I'm twerking. But I do want to know if I can twerk. From a physical level, yeah, I can totally do it. I'm not completely out of shape, and I have no back problems. But I'm also a guy, and some people think that means I should keep my butt to myself. But not with Jay Wadna.
Yeah, you can totally twerk. And that's the best part. Twerk Shop in itself, we are very aware that girls want to exercise in a fun way. You want to do a lot without knowing that you've done a lot, thanks Gen Y. And also, like, we get heaps of guys. We open the second class up to dudes because of that reason that, you know, guys do want to twerk. My milkshake brings all the boys to
the yard and they're like, and my 7th grade algebra teacher said I would never amount to anything. Well, look at me now, Mrs. Landis. I'm on top of the world, about to shake what my mama gave me. Except we're ignoring one thing. I'm white. And this is a problem for a lot of people. If you look up the reactions to Miley Cyrus at the VMAs, most of it isn't centered on her technical twerking ability. It's on her race. Apparently, twerking has roots in West African dance. And some think this means that Miley is appropriating black culture.
I feel conflicted only because if I were to define something as cultural appropriation, then I would be saying that I believe that's culture. Or I believe that's black culture. And I don't.
This is Brittany Lewis. She's a PhD candidate in the Feminist Studies Department at the University of Minnesota.
I don't believe that what she is emulating or co-opting or commodifying is black culture, i.e. because I define kind of my understanding of black culture very differently than I think pop culture and the mainstream media has done. And I would argue that these representations of black women were not created by black people.
Lewis equates these depictions to minstrelsy. It's taking black people and turning them into something like a cartoon. And this is where Miley gets into trouble. It's not so much about her appropriating black culture, but how she's doing it.
And then you see kind of the nation rewarding a lot of white artists, right, for doing, I guess what we're saying, is black cultural music. And she used black female bodies, right, to do that work. So, I mean, I think there's some critical questions to be asked here about the ways in which blackness and black bodies are being used for the advancement of whiteness in pop culture.
Here's the thinking behind the analysis. Miley Cyrus got on stage with Robin Thicke. Those two were at the forefront. Backing them up were two prominent props: teddy bears, which are literal objects, and black female dancers, whose bodies were being used like toys.
I think behind the history of black women's bodies as kind of this commodified object, I guess she picked her right tool. But I think the problem is that even when my students watched it, it was like, well, it's not a problem that black women's bodies are being used as a tool because we're used to that. It's a problem that Miley Cyrus is doing this because that's not what we expect of her as a white woman. I mean, that's even more problematic in my opinion.
It's a conflict of images, not culture. Because when various bloggers and internet commenters talk about who can twerk, it usually boils down to this. Dark-skinned women, relatively fit, large butt. And that's not a culture. Diane with Jay Wadna fits this description, but she's far from being African-American.
I'm a Sri Lankan female, first-generation Australian. So you know, should I be twerking if it's African American? But I got like, I got a big ass and brown, so apparently it's okay, you know?
Yeah.
And I feel a little bit more justified as well because a black guy told me about it. So, but then it's like, well, really, does that matter? You know, so at the same time, Miley, I'm sure it's plenty of black friends if we really want to go down that line. And I'm sure that she started twerking because she wanted to appreciate what the culture was and not make fun of it.
Well, what Jay Wadna sees as a culture isn't tied to race, but to twerking itself. She considers it an art, like any other dance.
Oh, for sure not.
Yeah?
Yeah. Yeah, and people that kid themselves and just, you know, try to hate. It's not even like a hater's gone hate. It's like it's a, okay, you're a hater because you're incredibly ignorant and because you have no idea what this is. And I'm not sticking up for this because this is my life. I'm sticking up for it because it's genuinely hard.
So twerking as an art form, then maybe the problem isn't that Miley Cyrus did it, but that she did it poorly?
Yeah, I think that she just didn't do it. And I think the videos of her doing it were really cute, and it showed that she was trying to do it. Like, she wasn't particularly good, but she was trying, you know. That night she just wasn't trying very hard.
But Brittany Lewis thinks there's too much focus on Miley Cyrus's ability to twerk. She wants a more critical analysis of pop culture. Why aren't white men being depicted twerking? Why are dark-skinned black women being used as props in music videos? Why is Kerry Washington on Scandal one of the only leading roles for a black woman on television? And why is her character the mistress to a powerful white man?
The illusion of choice. I feel like if I am, for instance, a black female actress, there are many actresses throughout history who have noted this. I might want to play a more empowering role, or I might want to show a different representation of blackness, but if they're not going to hire for anything but a mammy or a kind of hypersexual character, my options are limited here, right? And I want to eat.
And Lewis says the audience isn't doing enough to convince studios that they're ready for an improvement, because often the loudest voices are those complaining about a white character in a book like The Hunger Games or Marvel Comics being depicted by a black actor.
For those that are ready, who are reading, unpacking, and questioning these representations, well, my questions are, where is your voice at? Because certain voices are predominating the discussion.
For Culture Cube, I'm Mitch Skinner.
Bob Larson wants to be the kind of parent his father.
My name is Amy Friedman. I'm a producer here at Culture Q, and I've been working with Mitch and Marquita for a little over a year now. So, Mitch, the program that we work with to edit our stories is called Pro Tools, and Mitch is a Pro Tools magician. Like, every time I watch him use this program, I feel like a new volunteer stepping into the door for the first time. And if he's a Pro Tools magician, when it comes to the mechanics of a story or a radio story, I'm going to call him like a story surgeon, which is kind of weird, maybe. I saw him do an edit once of a coworker's story and was just blown away by how moving things around or rephrasing things, he could give this story just a whole new life. I know that he's going to be a great and successful journalist. And everyone else knows it too, because they're all giving him awards.
And that concludes the Mitch Skinner retrospective. Mitch, we wish you the best of luck after graduation. We know you're going to do great things, and feel free to stop by the office anytime. Next week's program will be brand new. New stories, new producers, new segments. Just a sign of what's to come in 2014. Don't miss it. Thank you for listening to Radio K's Culture Q, airing every Sunday at 6 p.m, bringing you all the stories from the Twin Cities you won't hear anywhere else. Our producers are Amy Friedman, Parker Lemke, and Katie Bullen. Our music reporter is Nathan Gurgis. Our culture coach is Sarah Lemanchek. And I'm Matt Curtis. You can find us at RadioK.org, PRX, and iTunes. Support for this program comes from the Minnesota Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund. See you next Sunday at 6 p.m., and thank you for listening.